Finance and Revenue is open. Good afternoon. We're going to start off with a public hearing and work session on House Bill 3067. And Malik is here for a summary on House Bill 3067.
Chair Harris, members of the committee, House Bill 3067 comes to you from your counterpart on the House, House Revenue. And what the bill does is trying to fix an issue for local governments when it has to deal with the distribution of money, of revenue, coming from marijuana taxes. As you know, the distributions in the statutes goes to 40% to the schools, 15% to state police, 10% to mental health, and 5% to health authority, and then you have 10% each going to cities and counties. However, with the process that happened with the legalization statutes and so on, the 10% to cities and counties were also contingent on these local governments or the cities and the counties being in the group of cities or counties that actually allow and do not prohibit the businesses, the marijuana businesses in their jurisdictions. So in order to be able to do that distributions, cities and counties have to certify to DAS every quarter before they get the distribution amounts. And what this bill does is allows for this certification to be on an annual basis rather than on a quarterly basis for them to get that distribution. And also, it was amended in the House to allow for a mechanism for a clawback just in case a payment in error goes to one of the cities or the counties that actually since then either prohibited or not. That's what the bill does.
Okay. Wendy Johnson and Rob Babette, please.
Thank you, Chair Haas, members of the committee. My name is Wendy Johnson, here on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities. Mr. Malik did a great job of explaining the bill. In layman's terms, this is really about monkeys and stress. I say monkeys because what this is about is a survey monkey email that goes out four times a year that stresses out our cities and counties, because that email that comes from OLCC goes in their spam folder and they miss it. And if they don't respond, they don't get paid. And they're frustrated that why am I hitting this certification every 3 months to tell them, no, my city hasn't changed. We still do not ban marijuana. Just send the check, please. They're literally certifying that they don't ban any of the license types. That's all the email says, but it comes via SurveyMonkey. And some of our cities are very small and have no staff, or they change and that email is set to it, go to the same person and they moved or something. So this is about the SurveyMonkey, and they literally asked us, can you please change this so it's once a year? And they're used to once a year because they have to do a certification for tobacco taxes and for gas taxes and for 911 taxes. And they do that once a year in July, and they send it to DAS. And they're like, can't you just put the marijuana one on the same form? And if we change our status, it's on us to tell DAS that we changed, but let's not do the quarter. So that's all this bill is about, is getting one certification so that we can alleviate the stress and stop the survey monkey. We worked with OLCC, DAS, and DOR so that it will work for everybody if there's a problem during the year, but that's really all the bill's about. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, for the record, Rob Babette, Legal Counsel, Association of Oregon Counties. Two things real quick. Ditto to everything that you just heard. It is a good bill and it should pass. But just to give you more assurance that moving from quarterly certification to annual certification is not an issue at all, we have now 4 years of history. No city or county has even attempted to move from opt-in to opt-out in that 4 years. Number one, we've had counties and cities that have moved from opt out to opt in, which wouldn't be affected. And the opportunity to opt out occurs only once every 2 years. You have to do it in a general election. So annual certification just makes practical sense. Happy to answer any questions, if you have.
No, it almost feels like one of those bills where you ask, do we really need to pass a state law?
Right.
Apparently we do.
We thank Representative Marsh for her willingness to do this to make it better for everybody, state agencies as well as local governments.
Chair Haas, I should say there was a fear in 2015 that we would see cities and counties bouncing back and forth and going in and out. It just hasn't happened.
Yeah. Senator Riley?
Are we in work session?
We are in work session.
And this is 3067A.
Mm-hmm. Thank you both.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3067A to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Riley moves House Bill 3067A to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none. Close the work session in public hearing on that, and I'm going
to
open up.
Do you need to cut it off?
Senator Riley, you want to carry this?
Sure.
I'm going to open up a public hearing work session on House Bill 3436. Also, one of the sponsors is Marsh. Caitlin is going to give us a quick overview. Thank you. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Kate. Yeah.
So, Chair Haas, members of the committee, House Bill 3436 deals with delivery sale of inhalant delivery systems. So, this actually came up a little bit in the tobacco testimony earlier in the week. Mm-hmm. This has to do with shipping delivery systems and being able to identify if the individual receiving these inhalant delivery systems is underage or not. And so, the bill outlines a number of ways to verify this that I'm sure Nolan will discuss.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you, and sorry for almost jumping the gun there.
Yeah.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Nolan Plesha, legislative director for Representative Pam Marsh, who represents House District 5, which includes Southern Jackson County. She apologizes for not being here today, but like many House members, she's stuck on the House floor right now, and I'm here to testify in her stead. Earlier last fall, with the help of a wonderful intern from Ashland High School, we conducted a There Ought to Be a Law contest. House Bill 3436A is the result of an entry submitted by several Ashland High School students to our contest. Many of you will remember that in 2017, we raised the age for the purchase of inhalant delivery systems, also known as vaping products, to 21. But the contest entry students reported that, regardless of the law, their underage peers easily obtained these products online. And as recent research has indicated, vaping has gone viral. In November 2018, the Center of Disease Control and Prevention reported that vaping by high school students has jumped 78% in a year. 21% of high school seniors reported vaping nicotine in the past 30 days. High school students who vape are also doing so more frequently, as 27% reported vaping on more than 20 of the past 30 days. And perhaps even more shocking, the number of middle school students vaping increased by 48% from 3.3% to 5%. This is a problem because nicotine is a highly addictive substance that can cause immediate harmful side effects to developing brains and bodies. Many of these devices contain as much nicotine as a single pack of cigarettes, and there's strong evidence that vaping may encourage kids to take up smoking tobacco, and I don't need to tell you that that's a problem. House Bill 3436A addresses the mail order of inhalant products by requiring vendors to undertake reasonable due diligence to ensure that the purchaser is at least 21 years of age. Vendors will be required to, one, verify the age of consumers through an independent third-party verification service, two, obtain a written statement with a signature that confirms that the consumer is at least 21 and provides clear notice that purchases by an individual under 21 is illegal. And this step can actually be done electronically. And three, verify that the credit or debit card or personal check submitted for the payment is issued in the name of the prospective consumer. House Bill 3436A is a logical, common sense bill to limit inhalant sales to underage minors. We are so grateful to the high school students who observed the need and proposed this solution to us. Thank you all for a moment of your time, and I hope you'll join us in supporting House Bill 3436A.
Thank you, Nolan. Senator Taylor.
Thank you, Chair Hass. So thank you so much for bringing this bill forward. I just want to understand about the verification. What is it that's going to be verified? Is that a driver's license, or how? What? How, can you just walk me through when you're online and you go to purchase something? How can a minor get around it, I guess?
Chair Hass.
Not get around it, I guess.
Senator Taylor. So it's the company's job to work with a third-party vendor to verify the information that they input online. And they're supposed to compare that with the federal database to make sure that the information that is inputted is actually correct. And that's kind of my basic understanding of that process.
Okay, follow-up.
Senator Taylor.
Thank you, Chair Hass. And maybe staff knows the answer, but I mean, is that through a driver's license, or how would they know that someone's over 21? I mean, when they what is the burden of proof?
Chair Hass, Senator Taylor, I unfortunately can't
answer that for sure.
But I would assume that would be the case.
Okay, and if I could just add very briefly, yes.
So
one additional portion of this is if I was a minor and I just ordered an inhalant delivery system with my parents' credit card and the name on that card, part of the verification is that the person who is purchasing this or getting the delivery has to have the same name as the person that used the card. So it should avoid that issue.
So I have to use my dad's name, right?
Well, presumably under the system, if I use my dad's name, that this would prevent that from working, if it works now.
So, Nolan or Kate, the penalties are only on those who are going in to try to illegally purchase this under the age of 21. It's not on the actual sellers, wherever they may be. We're not trying to do that. Is that
Chair Hass, yes, I believe so. If I can find the exact place in the bill.
Chair Hass, I believe that some of the penalties are actually on the people, on the business that's actually doing the selling. So if they aren't doing the verification process correctly, that they can be charged. But if somebody's illegally purchasing the product for somebody that's under 21, I think they can be penalized separately.
Well, how do you do that if the seller is in China?
Chair Hass, I don't know.
What section is that they tried to go after the business?
I mean, I'll try to find it right now. I'm not sure off the top of my head. Don't see that. So. Chair Hass, members of the committee, I don't see that just by quickly looking through it, but I can follow up on this.
Yeah, I don't see it either. I mean, I think it's impossible to go after someone out of state.
And I can make a note to try to connect with Rep Marsh later today and maybe get some more information.
Can I ask another question, please? Thank you, Chair Hass. And I don't know if who knows, maybe you know, is it? I believe we learned that you cannot sell cigarettes online, correct?
Correct. Right.
I believe that was the case. Still, there people are getting it done. It's just illegally being done.
True.
That's what's happening. I mean, that's what we learned. Yeah, you know, I just want to make it clear. I'm sure Representative Marsh, because she's always so thorough, I would assume that there's answers to these, I would think. But it seems like a really good idea to try to prohibit, because that is, as I said the other day, I can tell, I mean, my son's not doing this, but I know that teenagers are doing this. So I can understand why this is coming forward. So I think it's a great idea. I'd like to hear more about it, yeah.
I think all of the language in here just refers to consumers, not to suppliers, for good reason, but I don't think I see it in there. So. All right, thanks, Nolan. We're going to hold this one, close this public hearing and work session, and we'll open up a Public hearing and work session on House Bill 2053.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, House Bill 2053B makes changes to statute related to the new industrial property in rural areas program. It's only related to this program, which is different from a previous version of the bill. And it updates kind of two places, or clarifies two places where there's some confusion. So the first, it clarifies that the definition of employment for this eligible program refers to the applicant's employment at the location that would be receiving the tax, preferential tax treatment or property tax abatement, and not at their employment throughout the entire state. So that's a clarification, but not a change from existing implementation. And then the second, piece here is that it requires, or it allows the company or the applicant to make an agreement with the local government on about the date on which their employment will be measured. I think there was some concern that if I am working on a project at a site, I can't actually hire people for that project until the site is ready. And so having the date be when I'm applying doesn't necessarily make sense with the actual practice of the program. And so in this bill, it changes the date for employment and wage verification from being due on the application date to being due within the first year where property tax exemption would occur.
Senator Taylor.
Thank you, Chair Haas. Whose bill is this? Who brought this bill forward?
The governor's bill.
Okay.
I think, so initially, and it's in its initial version, it was a Business Oregon bill to try to deal with kind of making programs more similar across different requirements.
Yeah, it is Oregon Business Development.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Mike Leeson.
Thanks, Chair Haas, members of the committee. Mike Eliason with the Association of Oregon Counties. And your explanation was terrific and pretty much my entire testimony. This was a much broader bill on the House side, a cleanup, Business Oregon cleanup bill in a number of different areas. Late in session, it was pared down to the two technical fixes described by staff, which are really just two very minor technical fixes to the new industrial rural area program that was put in place in 2016 and tweaked in 2018. And Marion County has really been about the only county that's utilized it so far, and they had two applicants. And in the course of going through the applications with the with those two applicants, noticed that the language as described is a little confusing on two aspects. One is around the fact that this is a program that is site-specific, and yet the language around employment of the applicant seemed to be referring to if a company had numerous locations statewide, it took into account basically their employment around the whole state, when really it should be specific to that site. So that was one, and then the other was simply, as described, measuring an increase in employment before the new construction has even taken place doesn't make a lot of sense. And so the new tweak just basically says at a time agreed upon by the applicant and the sponsor, but no later than after the first year. And those are really the only two technical fixes, and it passed 60-0 on the House side, and hopefully you'll move it through today. Thank you.
Senator Taylor.
No questions?
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.
I think it's pretty straightforward. I have no issues. Yeah.
2053, is that correct? Yep. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2053B to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Riley moves House Bill 2053 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Seeing none. Objections? Seeing none. I'll carry this bill. And last but not least, I'll close out the hearing and work session and open up our hearing and work session of House Bill 2129.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, the House Bill 2129 is a bill that actually extends tax expenditures. It It came from the beginning from the Joint Committee on Transportation, then House Revenue, and then it comes to you. And what it attempts to do is extend three tax expenditures. One of them, or three programs. One of them is for the propane and natural gas vehicles. These vehicles would otherwise pay what is known as the use fuel tax. The use fuel tax is basically done in an equivalent to what a gallon tax would be, or a tax on a gallon of diesel. So what they do is actually they get a decal that they pay on an annual basis, and in order to not to have to pay at the pump or at the place of filling up every time. This one is primarily revenue neutral, or tries to be as much of a revenue neutral, because it goes on a schedule for otherwise what would have been paid under the diesel tax. The second program is for the dealers who have heavy vehicles above 26,000 pounds. And what they do is they, since they're operating 26,000 pound vehicles, under the law, they would have to pay a weight mile tax. What this extension would do is allow them not to pay a weight mile tax, but pay fuels tax instead, so they don't have to go and comply with all the weight mile tax regulations. The third one is one that extends the exemption from both the weight mile tax and the fuel tax for the vehicles that are used for testing on emissions and emissions vehicles and reduction of or increases and so on. These are primarily for research companies, companies that assemble or manufacture trucks or vehicles in the state. That's what these tax expenditure extensions in this bill.
Now, talking to Chris Alanek earlier, if this seems familiar, this was in the tax credit bill that just passed out of the committee, or at least some of it was.
So some of it, yes.
What's in here that wasn't in
what's,
the tax
what's
credit?
Different? The I think the one that is in here that also in the other bill is the one about the vehicle testing, the emission right. testing. The this is just happened to be one of three within this bill that started first. So in essence, this bill and the other one would only deal with that. The other two expenditures in the bill are not included in the tax expenditure bill, the bigger one.
Okay. We have no one signed up here. So I don't know what you think, Senators, but if I'm inclined to just leave this here for now unless we get some urgent request to move it from somewhere in the next day or two, because we covered, I think, the important part of vehicle testing extension in the tax credit bill, 2164.
Yes, I think the main one that came to the different committees is primarily about the natural gas and the propane decals, the annual thing. Testimony before that came with it, but. And you're right, the third one is already included.
Okay. All right. I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2053, public hearing and work session.
2129.
I'm sorry, I'm going to close the public hearing on and work session on House Bill 2129 and leave it there for now. Okay. I know you guys are anxious to get back to the floor.
Yeah, I don't know. We're missing all the fun stuff.
All right. So thank you. We are adjourned.